Hey, what's going on? Welcome to the Mile High Five podcast. I'm Doug Cunnington and Amberlee Grant is joining me today. How are you?
I am excellent today.
Welcome back to the studio. It's been a pretty long time. I don't even remember, maybe a year or more.
I feel like we did it a year ago, maybe.
Okay.
No, it could have been before my last kid was born. No, it was after. I don't know. Doesn't matter. I haven't been here in a long time.
It's been a while, but I'm glad to have you back around.
Yeah.
And today we're going to talk about spending, specifically like some recent purchases that we've made in the last year or so, and just kind of, I don't know, shoot the shit since we haven't caught up in a little while.
Yeah.
And we did see each other in Cincinnati, which we talk about extensively. It's like a mini episode at the end of this. And then eventually we realized that we hadn't even started the actual episode. So the sound check is very...
full.
It's deep. It's pretty long. So we will talk about spending, and we have a handful of examples about spending. And for the people that don't remember, I think we've talked about some of your frugal roots from back in the day. So do you consider yourself a frugal person?
Yes. Generally, I don't know what the definition of frugal is, but I do like to weigh quality, quantity, value, money when making some decisions. And a lot of decisions will come from that.
Okay. And that's how you think about it now. Mm-hmm. In the past, when you didn't have as large of a budget, were you making many decisions based on just like sheer low cost?
Price. Okay. Yeah, 100%. I think that's a great thing of what is the definition of frugal. And I think we all have our own definition of it. And I'd be curious to hear what yours is. But for me in the past, and I think for a lot of FI specific people, it literally is it over a dollar or not? Like that's, I think if it's over a dollar, then it's too much.
Yeah.
If it's under a dollar, it's probably just right, but it's not what you want. You know, I don't need a gumball.
Yeah. One thing, you know, we were just in Cincinnati, like we mentioned, and that's like a, for us, it's like a kind of a work trip. I mean, it's very social. We have a lot of friends that we get to see, but it does fall under the podcast umbrella. So that is a business networking thing that I'm doing. And you actually like, you spoke and you ran sessions. So it literally was another like
work event.
Yeah.
That was 100% a write-off.
And the thing is, like when you travel under another company, I'm like, I don't give a shit, right? You get a per diem, you have expenses and stuff like that. But when it's your own company, my own company, then every little expense is actually something that you are paying for. So when we think about food, for me, transportation, because a lot of stuff is like just a little too far to walk or a little inconvenient or not safe or whatever. So you're getting Ubers and stuff. And again, at that point, it's not me charging it into a company, like I'm paying for it.
Correct.
So there's waste in that system and I am okay with it. When it comes down to it, like I just looked back in all the Lyft rides that I took and I paid for a bunch of other people. I was just like, get in my car. I think you paid for one for me.
Yeah. I say you paid for one for me.
Okay.
I don't remember. Oh no, someone else paid one for both of us? No. Yeah.
We rode together once.
Yeah, we rode together.
I had a beer at the time, so I don't remember. Anyway, all those rides, it was only like $75.
Right.
Which is some amount of money.
Yeah.
And maybe like early in my saving career, I would have been like $75. Like
that,
oh man, that's a huge chunk. But in the grand scheme of things, now $75 is a light bar tab just for me.
Yeah, right.
So
it's happy hour.
So, you know, when it comes down to it, I think both of us have shifted what is acceptable way over that $1.
Yeah.
And it's relative to what I'm doing. Because if you eat out and, you know, you're maybe splitting a ticket or something and there's another surcharge because you have a big party, all of a sudden, it's like, man, I'm just spending way more than I thought for this just one meal.
Yep.
But it's okay because you don't want to be a fucking drag and be like, oh, I don't want to go out.
Yeah.
And everyone's in a different financial position. But I said a lot of stuff about spending money and how like I think both of us are a little bit okay with spending a little bit more while still having that value per dollar and frugality deep inside of us.
Yeah.
But we're open to spending a little more.
Definitely. Did you have a budget for economy? Like, were you going there thinking, I'm going to end up spending this amount, whether it was per activity or just in general?
You know what? No, I didn't. Okay. In the past, you know, thinking of flights and then the ticket and then a couple other things. I mean, I think it was probably around $2,000 in the past.
That's what I say for economy is about $2,000.
And I knew it was going to be a little bit cheaper this time because I shortened the trip.
Yeah.
So I shortened the trip and...
So one less night in a hotel. Do you share your hotel with anyone or do you have a solo hotel?
Bob Haynes is my roommate for the last 5 years. So
okay, got like, it. Yep. So you share it. Okay. Mm-hmm.
And then, interesting side note, I had some United points. So my ticket was paid for, or the flights were paid for, except for the $12. However, I was able to upgrade to first class for about $180 each way. Mm-hmm. So I did that and it was fucking awesome.
Oh,
it was
really
good.
Yeah. It's like a 3.5 hour flight. So that alone is totally worth the time value of money right there.
Yeah. So that was pretty nice. And it was a little test. I haven't been in first class in a few years. So it was, have you been recently?
Never been on first class my entire life.
Okay.
I think I've said the story here where I gave up first class for $100 so that I could drink more wine in Paris instead of paying $100 to go to first class on my way there. Biggest mistake of my life. But we're going to give myself forgiveness for that one. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I truly had zero money back then.
So $100.
It was a ton. I mean, it was a ton. And it was one of my first international trips other than living in Thailand. So.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. Again, big mistake.
All right. Any other ideas around just spending and being okay with spending before we hit our line items here?
Well, I actually want to just quickly tell a story, and I won't tell who it's about, but if they listen, which they probably do, they'll know it's about them. And I totally respect them and think this was such a cool conversation we had. So when you're traveling too, you can't do the efficiencies you would normally do when you're frugal, right? You might buy like a whole box of granola instead of an individual packet, which the individual packet per ounce is going to be a lot more. And so we had this conversation actually on the first day where someone had bought an individual nitro brew coffee from the Target down the street and it was $4.75, but they could buy the entire bottle like that has like five of them in it for $10. And so they were kind of kicking themselves that they had no place to put it and maybe they should have bought the big bottle and not the small bottle. And then I asked them, if you spent $4.75 for every single day at economy, you would literally have spent $25 over five mornings, because there's four nights, 5 days. And I said, does $25 matter to you? And the person was like, not at all. And I said, go buy the fucking nitro brew every single day and enjoy it because the hotel coffee is shit, you know? And it was just like a really good reminder for myself, like not even for them, but a reminder that when you actually put it into like, run the whole scenario, not just that one purchase. But if I were to do this every single day for this entire economy conference, it'll cost about $25 out of pocket. Does that matter in the long run? And the answer is no. So the amount of time and energy you're spending into even thinking about this or even talking about it is really, it's not useful. And then but then let's go to my frugalness, right? That was a lunch that I actually had gotten, paid for, and then ate half of because I can't eat as much of portions and ended up being like, oh, this will be my dinner. So I was able, and I was locking myself in my hotel room and I was nervous to go buy dinner at the hotel because I thought it might be too expensive. And so I was like, oh, this is perfect. Then I can take this to go, lock myself in there from literally like noon to the next day. And then I can have this for dinner as well. And that's my frugalness talking. And if I had to spend money at the hotel, like restaurant that night, it'd probably be about $25. And again, does $25 for this one meal, though it's multiple meals over economy, $25 for this meal really matter? And the answer is no, but the amount of stress I probably would have put myself under to buy that $25 meal is exorbitant and absolutely tipping the scales, like how much I would have stressed about it versus how much it actually is worth was completely disproportionate is the word I was looking for. Yeah. So I also fall into that trap, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because in our accumulation phase, and I mean, a lot of us had an upbringing that lended itself to frugality or basically like not spending.
Yeah.
And it worked for us really well for many years.
Yeah.
And when we're hanging on to it and we're thinking about like the math, and I think our friends at Choose FI mentioned, I'm going to get the numbers wrong, sorry, Brad and Jonathan, but if you can cut your expenses by $100 per month, when you use the 4% rule and multiply mm-hmm. that by 25, it's tens of thousands of dollars
yeah.
less that you need to save. While that's true, when you're accumulating, if you use that same logic and rationale to make your spending choices, then that $25 is dramatic, because we could think about it as a slippery slope where you're like, oh, if I spend 25 on this, and then if I do it every day, mm-hmm. all of a sudden you're spending whatever, $8 on the lattes at Starbucks or whatever.
Right.
And again, while it's true, if you have habits that lend themselves to sort of overconsumption that doesn't line up with the, like your income or revenue, then you will have an issue. But now that we've saved for many years and we have some additional money because we've been able to save so much over the years, it's okay if I go to the ATM and pay like whatever fucking $5 for the service fee. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter. Or if I can't find cheaper parking and there's people in the car with me or whatever, mm-hmm. and you're like, drive around and you're like, we saved $5. It's like, you just wasted all of our time. Like, I'll pay the $5. Like, this is a silly thing to waste time on.
Yeah.
So it's hard to flip the switch. And I don't think there's a specific amount or way to look at it where you're like, this is always okay or this is always not okay.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, you have to figure out, like, is it worth it to get that meal that's a little more expensive? You're not doing it every day.
No.
Normally you're having leftovers, you meal plan, whatever. Like, you're usually making good decisions. So it's all right if you give yourself a little permission to just spend a little more, especially when you're traveling.
Yeah.
Everything's out the window. Like, correct. You're at an airport, you have young kids. So, like, stuff could go sideways and you're like, we have to get I don't even know what.
Yeah. But the Fort Lauderdale airport burger that we buy every single time we go on these freaking cruises for FinTalks, and because they have no lounge. And it's like $45 for two terrible burgers. I don't know why we keep going to this burger place. I think it's just because we know it's there. Literally, that's it. I'm sure there's much better places, but it's one of those things you're like, oh my God, yep, just spend the $45 and call it a day. I think something that you were talking about, though, that I don't think you said explicitly, which is different parts of your journey require different saving. Because when you're first starting out, I think practicing the muscle of frugality, so not cheapness, though people are cheap and they are in this community and they are everywhere, but frugality. So being able to find like value-based decisions on what you're buying, making sure that you're not like quote unquote wasting. So you don't have a bunch of subscriptions you're not using. Perhaps you even are practicing a muscle of delayed gratification. You're practicing the muscle of like, you don't get everything you want. Right? You really are like withholding in a sense. And I think that's an important thing just to be able to move forward with in life for all aspects of life, essentially creating a hard that maybe doesn't truly exist so that you can overcome that hard and then do something new in the future. But that's the beginning phase, right? When I was making like literally $13,000 a year, that was the smartest move for me. Not to put things on credit card, not to go to the first class. Honestly, that was a total mistake. But still, like, but even in that moment, it actually was a good idea because I didn't have a lot of money. And $100 truly was going to drink a few wines with friends in France over like 4 days or not at all, because I just didn't have any money. So I had to make a decision based on like what's my value and purpose. I'm going there to hang out with my friends. I'd rather spend money with them and on them than on this first class part of my flight, because I only made very little money. But then as your income grows, as your net worth grows, those decisions have to change. And that's where I think we get stuck. And I say we as a collective, we in the FIRE space, we get stuck that it's still Amberly making $13,000 a year, not Amberly making $130,000 a year. So perspective.
Yeah. And it's a tough one. I mean, I think you mentioned a couple of things like with the delayed gratification and putting stuff off, which Elizabeth and I are very good at. And we've been doing that for a long time.
Yeah.
To the point where like we put off stuff that we should get.
Yeah.
And which is actually like bad in another way, right, where I'm like using stuff. And there's some stuff on the list.
I was gonna say, why don't we just jump into one of those things so we can have a good example? I'm curious.
Yeah. So when I asked Elizabeth about a couple purchases, so one of them is a rug pad. So we have some rugs upstairs, and we had like a rug pad that was a little older and it would slide around. Yeah. We play with Georgia. We run around and stuff. So it would get all bunched up. And she bought a new rug pad.
Yeah.
It's like one of the best purchases that she's made in the last year. It was like $15, but she was like, well, we have one and, you know, she doesn't want to be wasteful. And then when she got it, it was amazing. So super simple, but she was putting it off for a long, long time. I did a similar thing. I had a...
Can Apple- I pause there for a second?
Yeah, go.
I love that example because it's actually quite... It's one of those things you could put it off for literally forever. You keep slipping on the rug. Maybe sometime you actually slip and fall because I have the same thing. I didn't buy rug pads for a little bit. I mean, it was only like a month. Yeah. And then I was like, this is an absurd thing to hold out on, and bought the rug pads.
Yeah.
And we don't fall, like slip and slide on our rugs anymore. And so it's a quality of life decision where it's actually a small amount of money, but it seems wasteful or not useful until you have it. And if you spent that $15, maybe you'd spend it and the rug still moves and you're like, ah, this was a stupid purchase. Or you buy it and you're like, holy shit, our life is actually 10 times better for this small thing that we didn't know how important it was. I feel like that's like a, if I'm going to put it into a bucket, like that's quality of life to me. I don't know. What bucket would you put that into?
Yeah, that's a better way to think of it. I was thinking of it as like removing a negative, which is a quality of life thing. Right. So like, that's one of the areas where it might seem like it's unnecessary, but like whenever you could remove a negative, usually it has a great impact. And the more often you run into that issue, the better it will be.
Yeah, I like that. Remove the negative. Okay, so then what's your Apple Watch? Tell me your Apple Watch.
Oh, and this, my Apple Watch was just old and I put off getting a new one.
Yep.
And I was like, well, I'll see if I actually need one. Turns out I was afraid. I was like obsessing on stats and I have a lot of notifications off, so it doesn't bug me too much.
Yeah.
Turns out I was obsessing, but in a positive way, because I got a lot more steps when I got a new Apple Watch. So I was like putting it off.
Yeah.
Turns out as soon as I was having some battery issues, it was pretty old too.
Yeah.
I should have just got a new one.
Right.
So it turns out like from a health standpoint,
yeah,
I should have just got a new one right away.
Right. And then you would have walked more and really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
So what version of the Apple Watch did you have before?
I think I had maybe a 4,
okay,
something like that. And it was maybe 5, 6 years old or so.
Because I had an Apple Watch 5 and I also wanted a new one because the battery wouldn't last all day at all. So you'd have to like charge it daily before even the day was up, right? After 8 hours.
Yeah,
and actually, so as I was like, what, I bet you were right in the same time I was.
Totally.
And I had gotten mine for free from someone. And then I had some work points that I could turn into gift cards. And then this is like how far I went. And then I look back and I'm like, I could have just bought a $200 Apple Watch and it shouldn't have been a problem. What was your new one? Was like $250? Or did you go like for like a good one?
I got it as a gift from Elizabeth, so I'm not sure. I think it was a little nicer one, but nothing crazy.
So you popped out and you didn't even buy it yourself?
Right.
Okay, awesome. I love it.
I couldn't even do it. I was like, oh, wow, this is right.
Yeah, that's so funny. You didn't even buy your own watch. But anyhow, so neither did I. So I was like, I should get a new one, but I don't actually value the Apple Watch, to tell you the truth. I find it really good for telling time. I could just have a normal watch, which I have multiple of them. It's helpful, right, in our life. But I'm not a tech head. I'm a late adopter in tech, so I'm fine. But what I did was work had this, I had accumulated a bunch of bonus points at work. I got to turn them into an Apple gift card. My sister's husband works for Apple, so I got a nice discount. So they bought the Apple Watch for me. It was technically free except for $13 that I paid. And then it came to my house. And it really was a massive upgrade from the last one, as you experienced, that it was like night and day. That truly was a negative. I just didn't use it, the other one, very well, because it was just, you had to charge it literally after 8 hours. I found that this new one is great, but I don't use it more or less. And what I could do in the future, if I ever wanted to, is just go to a normal watch. I would feel comfortable with that.
Okay.
So I could have bought it I would in the future if I wanted to replace it. I don't know if I would. The 250, I don't know if I spend it because I don't know if I valued enough.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay. That makes sense. That makes sense. Okay. And you have a few things you have listed here. So yeah, we could kind of just go back and forth.
Okay. Yeah. On things we purchased this in the past year. And we can, did you put any purchases in there that you're like, oh, I bought it, but I actually don't think it added value?
I don't think so. They're all pretty good. Yeah, these are all good.
Okay. Well, actually, I did one, but it's really small. Okay. So one is, actually, speaking of economy, so for economy, I consulted my girlfriends who are like all about fashion, and they have like their nails did, they like have their hair done, like they are just always on point. And I very much admire them for that, because that is not a trait within myself and not something I seem to value as much. And so I asked them like, hey, I have to do this event. I don't necessarily want to wear any of the clothes that I have. What should I do? And I also don't want to go shop. I hate shopping. It's just, I don't like it. So they were like, hey, you should try this service called Nuuly. And you essentially pay $90 for the month. You rent 6 articles of clothing, and then they send them to you, and then you return them within the month. I hate picking clothes, it turns out, online as well. So this entire experience was very difficult for me, which is one of the things that I instead of working on my PowerPoint to economy, I was like trying to pick these dresses. And I was like, this is the week of hell that I have to do PowerPoints. I am sick with a sinus infection and I have to pick clothes. Man. I hate this. Anyways, but I did end up getting it, the subscription, picked some 6 dresses, just returned them on my way here. And it was awesome. $90. 6 clothing. I chose one for economy, brought it. It was a sparkly, crazy sparkly dress. Everyone really loved it. I ended up purchasing it from Nuuly at like a 50% discount and then returned the rest of the clothes. And I just like, what a cool service that if you have an event to go to, like a wedding or a trip, you can just essentially like rent some cool items of clothing, because it's not dresses only. It's like you can use like matching sets and like look super awesome with things that you would never normally purchase that cost $250 a piece, and then enjoy it. So I did that and I loved it.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Is it just for women?
No, I think they do have men's stuff.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah, interesting. I mean, I don't have anything coming up, but in the future, there will be weddings and stuff like that. And to your point, you didn't say this about your own wardrobe, but mine's a bunch of fucking t-shirts and shorts.
It's like, I say Mile Hi-Fi on it.
Yeah. These are the only shirts I have. So I don't have many nice things. And I recently got rid of like some of my old business casual, like the button-up collared shirts that I had.
Yep.
Yeah, I hardly have anything. So I don't even know. I don't know what I would wear if I had to go to anything where a t-shirt is not acceptable.
Right. And even if you were to go on a trip, let's just say like you go to Spain or something and you want some like lighter fabrics because you're walking around town all the time, instead of going and trying to find all those, and perhaps you're going in a time where they don't even sell that type of clothing in stores right now, you can get anything online. But like, it's such a cool idea just to take that. And so funny enough, I'll just say with the spending thing, that frugal mindset of mine, but with the Nuuly thing, if you don't return within 30 days, they charge you monthly, right? It's a subscription and you can end it at any point. But essentially, I had my articles for one full month. My subscription comes up and renewal in 3 days from now. It's on the 9th. Today's the 6th. And essentially, you have two options. One, you can keep your entire 6 clothing items and they just charge you again and you get to have them for a whole other month. Or you return them and you get to choose 6 more, or you return them and you cancel or pause your subscription. And I was freaking out that I wasn't going to return them in time. And I was like, oh my God, I'm going to charge another $90. What a waste of money. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, you know what? Who cares? If I accidentally end up not being able to get it on time for whatever reason, it's $90. It's not going to make or break my life. And if I stress about this or maybe start getting upset because I don't have time to run out and I'm getting mad at my husband, like that's going to cause a lot more than $90 worth of annoyance and damage in my life than just having them for a whole other month and getting to wear some pretty dresses and finding some like ways to, you know, like go out in them, right? So I really had to give myself permission to allow that subscription to accidentally do it again, because so many of us sign up for subscriptions and forget to close them out the next month. Yeah. And then we feel like really stupid about it or whatever. And I was like, you know what, $90, I'm okay. If I end up letting it like go again, I'm fine. I'll return them at the end of that month and try and use them if I can. And if not, then it's great. And I really felt like that gave me peace.
Mm-hmm. And the thing is, like, similar to eating out every single day, if you did that for all your subscriptions,
right,
maybe that's a problem.
Yeah.
But the kind of mindset that you and I and many of the listeners out there have,
yeah,
like, we feel really bad if we, like, let a subscription go, and we have calendar reminders to let us know you knew the date was coming up, but like, life stuff happens. So, yep. I mean, occasionally there's some waste in the system.
Yes.
And it's all right.
Yep.
Quick example, kind of similar. Elizabeth and I were on some road trip, and we got to the hotel late at night. We were driving all day. Mm-hmm. She's like, we didn't have a reservation there. She accidentally booked it for like 2 months before she booked the trip. So
I did that.
It was just, yeah. Mark just did that. Mark told me the last time he was here. Yeah. So it's like, we're all very detail oriented, but sometimes we make a little mistake, mm-hmm, and you book the trip for the wrong day or whatever. And it worked out fine. She felt a little bad because it was whatever, $150 that we were charged. And then that was gone. There was no refund. Like, that was 2 months. Yeah, it was a long time from the transaction. And there was nothing, like, we were charged because we didn't show up and we didn't cancel. So that was the end of that. But yeah, that was, that ends up being a couple meals on the road at least. And it was totally okay. And we just moved on. I didn't give her a hard time about it or anything. So,
but some people might. That's the whole point, right? Some people may feel like that's the end of the world. And you have that, like, that feeling inside yourself where you have, like, the pit of your stomach and you're like, oh my God. And then you want to blame them for not paying attention or for wasting, like, your money, like your collective money. Mm-hmm. And I want to remind ourselves that that causes the damage, right? And then we have to look inwards. Why am I so triggered? Because my husband will do that and he'll be like, oh, that sucked, you know? And he'll just, like, move on. And I'm like, right? And so what is it about me and the things that I grew up with, the stories I tell myself that make me freak out over messing up the hotel when someone else has did the same thing but didn't actually get upset? Mm-hmm. And I think we need to start to look inwards when we are very much triggered by wasting anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Ready to move on to a couple other things?
I love it.
So I grouped a few together. So we'll put this in the fitness bucket. We got e-bikes. So I got mine a couple years ago, mm-hmm, or so. Elizabeth got one so that we could ride together, yeah, which is good. So I'd say fitness, but I mean, with the e-bikes, we're actually out more than we would have with our normal bikes, but we get a little assistance. And that's good for us because we're not normal biking folks. You actually biked over here, which was cool. Good ride?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, okay. I love it. I haven't biked for a commute in years. I just didn't feel like I had the capacity with small kids. And I just was biking here and I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. I'm so happy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love it. I love biking.
Very cool. And there's a lot of greenway on the way here. Were you able to use much of that? Or I know you had to run some errands and such.
Well, I had to return my Newly on time.
Yep.
And so, no, I ended up on the main roads, but I actually never mind that. I've always been someone who's fine. First of all, I don't feel uncomfortable biking with cars. I've been doing it for a long time. I just was really enjoying the fact that I was on a bike.
Yeah. Cool. It was a beautiful morning too. Not too cold, but a little chilly.
Perfect. I had to wear gloves and I wore a scarf, but then I just wore like a jean jacket and jean pants.
Jeans. We just call them jeans.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%.
It's all denim. It's a great look if you're just listening out there.
I'm in a Canadian tuxedo. Okay. Rep the Canada.
Okay. And the other fitness related, a weighted vest. Mm-hmm. So that's one of those, like so many things on Amazon, so fucking hard to understand like the quality of what you're getting. Mm-hmm. So you can get a weighted vest that's like $25 or $250. And I got the $250 one. I was like, I don't want it to like break. Some of the others look shitty. Yeah. This is a really nice one. So it's, again, hard to tell with the reviews because everyone said, I mean, it's the same. It's like, this is perfect. This is the best one you could possibly get. And it's a 10X value difference or cost difference. So anyway, I got the good one and it is really nice and it feels good. So do you have a weighted vest or?
I don't, but I think I just had a picture in my head of you, of the weighted vest, like the seams just being really bad. And so all these weights dropping and you trying to pick them up as other weights are dropping and like being like, damn you, $25. That would be really embarrassing on your walk with Georgie. So
Yeah.
Do you use it on your walks with Georgie?
I did when I first got it and I haven't been using it as often, but I should. Several times I would actually wear it to the gym and get on the stair climber thing, which is just brutal.
Yeah.
So I keep talking myself out of it before walking over because I remember how bad it is on the way back, right? Because I'm just like, oh, I got to get this thing off. But there's no short, I can't take it off and put it in the car because I walk to the gym. So I'm just like, oh, it's really, I'm so weak sometimes, but.
Just less weight maybe. And then. You know, it's not as effective on the stair part, but then you get, then you use it.
Yeah.
And you enjoy it. Well, something to think about too is resale value. Like that's my frugality thing, right?
Yeah.
That's my frugalness coming into play where sometimes you can just donate it or give it away or throw it out, whatever, depending on the item, right? And what the appropriate course of action is. But something to think too is that sometimes when you buy certain pieces, you can resell it even 2 or 3 years down the line for maybe half of what you paid. And so when you're looking at a 250 vest and you're like, oh, I can resell this on Facebook Marketplace for $100, like that's, and you get to use it, like that's a pretty cool, totally. Like return, right?
Yeah.
Essentially. And so thinking about things in that way too is part of my frugalness was always like reduce, reuse, recycle kind of stuff. I biked everywhere because I just wanted to just consume less in the world. And that's one of my ways is I try and either now at this point in my life, mostly just give things away to people who need it, but you can sell it.
Yeah. And that'll come into play with a couple other things that I mentioned. And the last one on the fitness front, Elizabeth got some dumbbells. So we had a few, but they were not the right weight for her to do workouts here. And she kept waiting. And eventually she got him and it was like, oh, this is great. And again, another, I don't know how much they cost, but it was under $100 to get like just the exact weight she needed. So she works out more because she has the right weights and she's not prone to injury because she was trying to lift too much and hurt her shoulder, blah, blah, blah. So pretty easy. I feel like almost anything for fitness and health is like, that'll be a good return. Go ahead and spend it on that.
I think so. And even if it does collect dust, you might pick it up later, or then that's when you give it away to someone else. Something to remind everyone is that your work might have a fitness stipend. So my work gives me $260 a year, $360 a year to spend on either fitness equipment or memberships. And so just reminding everyone to go do that. Even if you're like, oh, I should just use it on my gym membership, but I don't go the 8 times. Hi, me. That I always do 7 times a month. I don't know. Not the 8 that it requires. That even just spending that on like an item, like we spent it on dumbbells last year because we had $15 left at the end of the year. And I was like, I'm going to use up every dollar of this and bought 3 and 2 pound dumbbells for our Peloton. And so just using up your fitness stipends that you might have at your W-2 jobs.
Mm-hmm. And you have a fitness related one here too, right?
I do. What did I have? Oh, yeah. Speaking of gym memberships that I go 7 times a month. Yeah, I have a $185 gym membership. I say the price just because I want to normalize that health is wealth. I was super nervous to sign up for that because before I had this awesome gym in Denver forever that I got a really great rate on. And I couldn't believe the prices of gyms these days, like boutique gyms. But here's the thing. If I go to, we saw each other at the fitness center a lot way back in the day. I do not work out on my own well. I don't enjoy it. I am a class-based person and classes are always going to cost money. So I love walking into a place, someone telling me what to do and not just like a fitness class at the rec center. I want like someone wants me to lift some heavy weights fitness class. So yeah, I spend $185 a month. Sometimes I, like last month when I was sick, went to the economy, I literally used it 2 times, I think last month. And so I spent, I guess that's like $90 a workout, $92.50 a workout. Quite expensive workouts, those dropping costs. But it's one of those things where I like had to just give myself grace and forgiveness. Like, hey, you essentially quote unquote wasted your gym membership last month, but now I've already gone 3 times this month. We're on the 6th. Oh, nice job, man. Really?
Yeah, keep it up.
Dang, girl. And I just kind of jump back into it. But gym memberships are expensive and I will use that one, but I could also go get a $35 Gold's one and never use it. So I'd rather just do what I like.
It's interesting. I was chatting with a friend and he he was trying to figure out which gym to join. So mm-hmm. he was testing some out. And then he travels quite a bit. So he had trips lined up and he delayed joining a gym because he was going to be gone for a few weeks. And then when he got back, he didn't join it again.
Yep.
And it ended up costing him in a fitness and health aspect because he was trying to save money to optimize when he joined the gym. And I fell into that trap because at the rec center, before I joined, I got the punch pass kind of deal. So I got 20 of them. So each time I went costs whatever, $4. Yeah. And I was like, well, am I going to get a $4 workout? And I'm like, well, I think I'm just going to kind of not get my money's worth. So I'm not going to go. Mm-hmm. So I was playing like a weird game and essentially just not working out. Mm-hmm. And eventually I was like, this is fucking stupid. So I gave Elizabeth the punch pass. I joined and that way it removed, I'm like, I paid for a year up front and I can go multiple times a day if I want. So that's, it's irrational. Like I was making weird decisions based on $4 mm-hmm. over and over again and eventually just like not working out.
Right.
So it's kind of silly.
Yeah. I love that you said it's irrational. We have this idea because a lot of us maybe have gone to business school and we learn economics in business school. And within economics, they have this absolutely absurd idea that people are rational players, right? We are making rational decisions. And then you have behavioral economics, which is the idea that people are completely irrational with our choices and behaviors. And that truly is the better thing to be studying, I think. And it's funny because if you were a rational person, you would have made totally different decisions, I think. But you're thinking irrationally. And so again, sometimes taking ourselves out of the situation, what would someone else do? Okay, Amberly and Doug are telling me the story. I'm also making $4 decisions. It sounds like Doug went and got a full year's membership. Amberly spends $185 a month on her membership. Like that's like, maybe I should entertain that, right? So taking yourself out of the equation and what would someone else do can help us make better decisions.
Rational person.
Yeah, like more rational decisions, right? Sort of. But maybe like we are like paying $185 when I went to, like that's not technically rational either, right? Why we are not rational beings. But it also can give you permission to like, oh no, let's try the thing out. Because here's the thing, I had to do that mindset going to this gym. I was like, okay, I'm going to sign up for 3 months. I like haven't worked out in a while. This is important to me. And I signed up and that was like 5 months ago. And I was like, I'll just give it 3 months. That's literally, I was like, okay, that's $600 essentially that I'm going to spend to try and like get my fitness back. And I'm continuing to go because it's been so helpful. But I wouldn't have known that if I didn't spend $600. Mm-hmm. Like you have to have some waste to figure out what your likes and dislikes are in life.
Are you the kind of person that enjoys the sunk cost of $185 a month? So you're like, I need to take it. Advantage of the fact that I have a membership and using the frugality and the value in a positive way to get your ass to the gym.
No. It's gone. The money's gone. If I don't show up, I don't show up. I'm terrible with that. Okay. I'm not motivated by money.
Okay.
It really isn't a motivator for me at all. Truly, the thing that I know people who are like that. They are so. I admire a lot of people in this world. And yeah, I am not even close to that. No, I'm like, oh, cool. I signed up for 6 months. I could go twice. And like, well, turns out I wasted $600.
Yeah.
No, okay. I have other strengths. That ain't one.
Okay. That's fair. It works on me moderately. So I try to, the sunk cost is like, okay, you spent money on that. You have to use it. So
I like that. Then I admire you. And actually, when I look at you, I think you are someone who's like, oh, I did the thing. I'm going to like move my world around that thing to like to do it. Mm-hmm. And I really admire that about you.
Thanks.
Yeah.
All right. I'll move on. I got Elizabeth a bird buddy, which is kind of fun.
What is this?
This is one of those bird feeders with a camera that's hooked up to Wi-Fi. So pretty cool. Like we had some bird feeders and I wasn't sure if she'd like it. Turns out she had a really fun time with it overall. She's had some light battles with squirrels and raccoons trying to keep them out of it. I'll show you in the back there, but overall it's been a fun activity. I think it was like maybe $100 or $150. I can't quite remember, but not a huge amount. And it ended up like making her enjoy like birds and bird watching, which is a great retirement activity.
Right. And you enjoy your own home.
Yeah.
So like another quality of life thing, right? Or it's totally. Like, you don't need to have a bird thing to watch it. But like, if you're sitting at home all day, because that's actually what you enjoy doing during your retirement, then perhaps investing in fun things around your home that make you like kind of get excited about it more.
Yeah.
It's kind of a good idea.
Do you guys have bird feeders and such?
We don't. I don't want to attract squirrels. No, funny enough, my neighbor, the squirrels attack all of his like decks and stuff. So they've eaten everything in his backyard, but they've left our backyard alone for the past 3 years. Mm. Only one of them may have gotten to a light that they chewed off because it's like perfectly like chewed thing that fell off of our, like one of the lights fell off of our outdoor lights. I don't have anything like that. Nope, not something okay. I'm interested in. Okay. We do have a sandbox that we've built, and then we just built a water table. So like two plastic containers with water that hold water so that my kids can play.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's been really good. The thing we did invest in at our house is our new couch. Okay, so this is one of those Aaron Billy put something off for way too long. So we bought our house, and the people who were there left a massive sectional couch. And it was perfect because we just spent all of our money on this house that we weren't planning on buying, which I think you could probably listen back to other episodes and learn about it. And so we didn't have money for a couch, and I would never buy one at that time. But the couch was, there's a reason they left it. First of all, it was massive. But secondly, it had lots of like, so there's a big dip, you know, in the corner part where everyone sits, it was like really dipped down. I don't like, some people like cloud feeling things. I like everything hard. Like I like hard surfaced beds, hard couches. And every time you sat on the couch, the pillow would kind of just start to sneak out or would like start almost falling off the couch, you know? So every time you get on the couch, you had to like lift the thing up, push the pillow in, sit on it, and then hopefully not move too much and then still be sunk down into the bottom of it. And I hated this couch to the point where in the last year, like literally this last year, I stopped going downstairs, like into our family room. Literally,
it's like a nemesis.
Literally, I stopped going downstairs. I stopped watching my husband play video games at night. I just would go into my bed and hang out. I avoided it like the plague. And then we were like, you know what? This is ridiculous. I need to be able to sit down in my own house. But couches are expensive and we wanted a big sectional. We have two boys. They like roughhouse on it. We have rings that come down. They like do their like crazy stuff from the couch. So we wanted to get something that was good and I wanted quality because my husband's massive, like six, I'm going to probably offend some people now saying massive, but 6 feet, like 200 and something pounds, right? Like, so whenever he sits down, it will carve a groove in something. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Anyways, I started looking into online couches that bigger people can sit on without having an issue. And Lovesac came up. But Lovesac couches are like $13,000 for like the one that I want. Literally, it's $13,000 for the one that I want. That's not ended up what I paid. My frugalness came into play. But for about 4 months, I had debated whether or not we should do it, still continued to avoid the basement. And then we bought the couch. We went to Lovesac, sat on them in their showroom down between here and Denver. Got a quote with their like 40% off sale that they only have like every couple of years. It was like $7,000. And so we had to decide like, are we going to spend $7,000 on a couch? Like this seems insane. And so we decided like, let's just sit on this for a bit. We might lose the sale. It's fine. And then I found out there's resellers online. And because I'm frugal and I'm okay with like defects and stuff like that. And I was okay with not having a warranty because if I spend less on the couch, then I can just replace all those items cheaply as well. So we found those resellers online. Essentially, when people return their couches, return their things, these people, they go to these people and then these people resell it. And it's like an agreement with Lovesac that they have because Lovesac doesn't actually have like proper showrooms of like holding onto equipment. They essentially like direct to manufacture kind of stuff, right? Mm-hmm. And they send it out. And so they have these people, they do it. So we ended up ordering from someone who did that. So our couch ended up costing $4,800 instead of the $7,000 on sale, the $13,000 not on sale. And even when it was about to be delivered after I purchased it, I was like, I told my husband, like, what if I regret this? What if this is like a terrible decision? I was freaking out. And then we got it, put it together, and I will never look back.
Yeah.
Best decision ever. Yeah.
Dang.
Yeah.
I was talking to Rusty, who was on an episode recently, and he had already retired. He and his wife were high earners. He had a story of buying a Subaru, and he was like freaking out. And it was $19,000, but he was just like really stressing it. He said he almost threw up. He just felt sick. It was spit. You were like, what are we doing? Like, your first car was probably like, whatever, $1,500 or something.
I literally said, we don't own a car that costs as much as our couch that we just bought. Literally that. I was comparing them to the cars that were in our driveway. Anyway.
Got it. Yeah. Interesting. And now it's off. How long ago did you get it?
A month and a half ago.
Okay. So it's like,
it's been set up. We've had it for a month.
This is fucking awesome.
It is the best. I'm downstairs all the time. I sit on it. I'm not adjusting pillows. Is that like negativity thing that you had?
Yeah.
It was every time I went there, it was a negative interaction with this couch because I had to do things to make it somewhat comfortable and it still wasn't even comfortable. And so I took that away, spent $5,000 to take it away, $4,800. And it was like, our family is like happier because I'm downstairs playing. I'm watching my husband play video games. Like I literally for an entire year stopped interacting with my husband. I mean, there's many reasons in that way of like, we just had a kid, we traveled a lot, but stopped going down there from like 9 to 10 and hanging out with him because I hated that couch.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Interesting. That's awesome. Yeah. And I was going to say, we have a couch. We moved in during the pandemic and it was harder to get stuff in general. I don't remember what ours cost. A few thousand, in the same price range, probably a few $1,000. And I think we had to order it again, the supply chain issues, blah, blah, blah. Elizabeth wanted something specific, but yeah, definitely made a big difference upgrading from the very cheap whatever we had in there before. Yeah. So,
yep. Quality of life. That's like another one, right? Quality of life, no negative interactions. It's worth a lot of money. And the thing is we could afford it, right? That's what it comes down to is that my net worth has increased, you know, so much in the 3.5 years since we purchased our house. So we purchased our house 3.5 years ago. We didn't have enough money in the bank at that time, or probably even net worth to justify like purchasing a $13,000 or $5,000 couch. Maybe. I don't know. That's a subjective idea. But it's been 3.5 years. We've done really well in the market. You know, our rentals are still going strong. We've made decisions and our net worth has increased greatly in these past 4 years. And so why can't I make a different decision today? Why do I have to continue with the free couch that doesn't actually, detracts from my life?
Yeah.
And so making that decision from a new lens and new perspective, not the Amberly 3.5 years ago who just purchased a home and like wasn't sure what was going to happen, to me, very different person, very different experience. I can afford it.
Yeah. One related question. What'd you do with the old couch? Because in my head, and I'm trying to sell some stuff on Marketplace and other things. Again, we don't want to throw things away. We don't want to waste things when there's still good value in life. That said, can be a hassle moving shit and all that. So what'd you do with yours?
Yeah. So we felt ours was in good enough condition that we could offer it to someone. Like it wasn't, all the material is great. It just was like that one section was that those things fall out as long as we even tried to like Velcro it. So we offered it to actually my son's preschool teacher really loved it. She'd come and watched them at our house. Perfect. Loved it. So we offered it to her and she measured her space and it turns out it didn't fit. So she was a no. We offered it to Pete, who was getting a new house. And so, but that was a no as well. And then we threw it on Facebook Marketplace for $100 and a family who wants a new couch and will get one eventually came and picked it up for $100.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Okay. And it's just, I'm in a spot where I probably need to lower the price on a couple things. I'm not in a hurry, but at the same time, I had some good stuff move and it was intoxicating. Is it too strong of a word? But I was like, oh, I'm clearing out clutter, get a little money. Someone else is getting something about, they're really happy about it. This is great. Everybody wins. So I probably just need to lower the price. Cause I mean, the thing is like the timing has to line up with someone who's looking for the thing, but also if it's cheap enough, sometimes people will buy it. Like even if the timing's not quite right. Yep. They're just like, this is a good value. I'm going to buy it.
Yep. Like we could probably have technically sold our couch for maybe $400.
Yeah.
Just because it's a massive couch. Ultimately, that's like, it's good enough. But then it would have sat in our garage for possibly, like you're saying, like possibly a month. But $100, it was gone within little. I was at economy. I left the day beforehand. It was in our garage, which was actually kind of fun because we like sat in our garage a lot. And then I got a text from my husband the next day. Couch is gone.
Gone. Love it.
So
very done. Cool. All right. We are still like halfway through our list. So we'll go faster. I'll skip a couple things. What else do you have on your list that you want to hit? Maybe the top three or so that you got left.
We bought my husband a bike. We've been talking about it for years. We have had two kids. We had like a trailer, but never like we could attach it to my bike, but I don't really want a bike with kids around like behind me.
Yeah.
It's just not something I'm interested in. And we've been putting off buying him a bike for a long time for many reasons. We spent literally 6 months abroad last year, so there was no point. But we finally got one for him today that he loves. And that's what we figured. We're like, oh, wow. It turns out when you love something, you do it more often too. Mm-hmm. So we spent, he could have gotten like a $250 bike off of Facebook Marketplace or a new one for like around $800 to $1,000. But he ended up getting like a super nice one used for $800. That was like normally, I don't know, something like $1,700 and he loves it. So we got a bike and now we are all biking as a family all the time. It's so cool. So
cool. Yeah. And today, like literally today,
got it? Well, got it 2 weeks ago.
Okay.
So we've been biking our son to preschool. So we all go as a family. A lot of times I might work, but then we'll go together. We just biked yesterday to Andy and Kara's for an Easter hangout. And then we biked home. We went and biked our kids from preschool to Andy and Kara's on Friday. We went on our bikes and went to happy hour together and hung out and then picked up our kids and went. So like we're in so much more like better shape, I think, as we're doing this. It's so much better. So we did that. We get a house cleaner every 2 weeks, which is probably one of the best decisions I've ever made. That's also another one I put off for like months.
Mm-hmm. What's that cost?
$160 every 2 weeks.
Okay.
Yeah. So just over $300.
And it probably saves you 3 to 4 hours per week or something.
Yeah. I would say almost every week, probably 2.5 hours, probably both to each. So just the value of that is incredible. But I also don't think about cleaning certain parts of my house anymore. Like the bathrooms, she's got them. We just clean them if someone comes over. We'll just always do a tidy up. But we don't we sweep our floors all the time, but we don't have to like mop them all the time anymore, except for if there's like a spill. So we just leave a spill for 2 weeks, you know, until the cleaner comes. I'm just joking. We don't do that. We have two small children.
That's great.
Yeah.
And
do you have a cleaner?
We don't. I was telling Elizabeth not too long ago, we actually don't mind cleaning so much, but I think someone else might clean more thoroughly or differently. And there's a value with that. The side note, is it a small business owner?
Oh, yeah. So, and she does like me, Mark, Mindy and Carl, Andy and Kara.
Oh, cool.
And she's incredible. She is so, I used to own an Airbnb. I've interacted with many, many, many cleaners. And there are all types of cleaners out there. And she is so good at what she does. It's just her.
Cool. One pro with that, because I think some people would be like, I don't want to spend extra for stuff that I could do on my own. It's supporting a small business in our community. Like that is one of the best ways to like help folks out is just like be a customer of theirs, especially, you know, there's no waste in that system. It's not a franchise. It's not a thing. It's just like you're working directly with her and she's spending money in our community, which is a really good thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, you get to know her life with her kids and things like that. No, I love her and I'm all about that. That's supporting local.
Let's see. One theme that we've both talked about is like buying used stuff. So I'm starting to look around my room. There's more guitars than probably the last time you were here and amps and other stuff. All the stuff used. So I think I got maybe two new amps since the last time you were here, maybe one more guitar, all used. And I actually kind of like that, especially on the guitars, because I don't want to get something that doesn't have a scratch and is pristine. I want something that's kind of roughed up because I'm not going to baby it. And usually, I mean, you can get them for 50% off or more if you find the right person and you make it easy, pay cash, like, you're a nice person overall. And to your point, if I resell them, most likely I'm not going to lose very much money, especially if I got a decent deal on it in the first place. And yeah, like reduces waste. Someone else had a nice time with it. Usually people don't beat up their equipment, whether it's right. like camera gear or even like recording stuff. Like if I was going to outfit like a new studio, I could probably buy like new cameras and new mics and all the stuff for like 50% less than retail. And again, I mean, like these mics were, I think I got them on eBay used, and I mean, they look brand new. They came with a box. I mean, people buy this stuff thinking they're going to start a podcast and then never start. So that was a big thing. I've, like I said, a couple new guitars. I've been putting new pickups. You might be able to see the pickups are new and a couple of the guitars, which is a fun little project I was soldering, and it was nice.
Well, you're learning a new skill too. So that's really cool, right? Like it's not just like you're interacting with it as like its own object and your own object. You're actually like manipulating it, which is a really cool and I think important thing to do in our lives.
Yeah. New skills and new stuff. And then I use the guitars to play music with people. Yeah. So it's a good exercise. Okay. What's next on yours?
Well, essentially, I think for me, travel is always something that we spend money on. And I just recently like bought plane tickets. We, as I said, we spent 6 months abroad last year. So anything that has to do with travel to me is always a really good value, especially if I can share the world with my kids, because I think it's really important in a different perspective. So I just recently purchased plane tickets to, I'm doing a women's entrepreneurial event that I'm speaking at, another opportunity to speak.
Nice.
In Orlando. I hear we're going to, in past years, they've gone to Epcot Center as well as, which I think is Disney World. And then also a yacht.
Oh, okay.
So I'm pretty excited about this one, but I just got plane tickets for that. So that would be really nice.
That's cool.
Yeah.
What's your topic going to be? Do you know?
Yep. It's essentially going on the what is enough, but a lot of people define enough by monetary means, and I don't do that. I define it by what is it that got you into the game in the first place? How much do you actually need? So calculating that number, and then what is driving you? So what purpose inside yourself that did you pick up when you were 5 years old that you are not enough, or you have to do something, you aren't worth it. Whatever those kind of sayings and thoughts you have in your mind are actually the script on what is or isn't enough in your life. And that's what's driving you, not the number that you're working towards. So specifically, this is women who are entrepreneurs and own rental properties. And I find in the rental world, everything's about more, 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 bigger, bigger, bigger. I have 10, you have 5, I have hotels, you only have rentals, whatever. And so I really like to bring an entirely new psychological concept to people who have that kind of framework and mindset.
Interesting. Yeah, I was going to say with entrepreneurship, I saw exactly what you mentioned where people are like more, more, more. And I was like, I'm good. Like I'm coasting and shutting stuff down. So yeah, I think that's a good message to bring to that group.
Yep. So as a workshop based thing. So we do like a lot of activities to really understand what's going on inside of us.
Nice. All right. And then I'll let you run through anything else you're spending on.
That's it. I think I'm actually getting rid of subscriptions because funny enough, when you said the newly like, oh, if it goes, you know, if you do that with all of your subscriptions, I have been doing that with all my subscriptions lately where I'm like, oh, I have Apple TV, I have Netflix, I share some of it with people, but like Hulu, I have all these things. And recently the Netflix was not able to be shared anymore with a family member. So I was like, I don't really need $22 worth a month of Netflix at this moment in time if I also have these other things. So I'm actually getting rid of it, trying it out for a bit just to see what that looks like. So try things out, not only just bring them into your life, but also get rid of them. So we just canceled that a week ago. That's $22 a month we'll recoup. My husband's pausing his gym membership because now we're on the bike all the time. We also have a Peloton membership. So we're pausing that. So just that we're recouping. Essentially, we calculated about $120 a month just in subscriptions that we've been paying for probably like 4 months and haven't been using at all.
Gotcha.
So we're like, okay, let's just audit some of our stuff right now.
Yeah. I think that's perfect for, especially the like Netflix or similar. You can only watch so much. So we usually just have like one service at a time because that's, I mean, we don't need more choices. There's always too much anyway.
Yeah, totally. And Netflix went through a really shitty time where they like had really bad stuff on for like a whole year, but now it's awesome. I had to give myself like, okay, you're going to give it until the end of last month, like watch everything you wanted to watch. but when you share it with other people, it does make it seem better because then you're like, oh, well, I'm not paying $14 a month plus 22. I'm actually paying like $11 a month and I get both subscriptions, right? Or I guess sure. More than 11 a month. But yeah, it was like, it made sense until the parameters changed where Netflix doesn't allow us to share it.
All right. So I think we covered what we needed mm-hmm. to. What's new with FinTalks?
Tuesday conversation. Every week we speak about different financial topics and life. We have 60 members right now, which is awesome. We FinTalk members also get money off of cruises. So if you come to a FinTalks cruise, you get $50 off your FinTalks cruise, which pays for like 1/4 of your entire membership. We have a January 24th, 2027 Caribbean cruise, and we are going up on a cruise line right now. So it's no longer Royal Caribbean, but we're doing Celebrity. So better food. It's only a 2-year-old ship. So it'd be really nice. And I'm super excited to experience that because everyone was really excited to get up in their brand. Mm-hmm. And then secondly, we've got a house in Italy that I'm actually finalizing information on right now, but that will be open to FinTalk members only first. And it normally sells out because it's only 10 bedrooms over 2 weeks. But FinTalk members first get access to it, and then we'll open it up to the public if anyone wants to join. That one definitely is a personality fit, as in like, we just make sure that, you know, like we'll all get along in this house since it's an awesome place in Italy in the Umbria Valley overlooking Lake Montepulciano. So super excited. Mm-hmm. It's a farmhouse and each suite has its own like kitchenette and washroom. So you're essentially in your own hotel room.
Yeah.
Surrounded by your friends. And then 2028 Antarctica.
Oh yeah. I was hearing about this.
Uh-huh. So I'm finalizing amounts right now on that too. We'll take deposits and essentially we're going to Antarctica February of 2028. It will be a trip of a lifetime. You will be able to like basically go and get another continent on your belt if that's important mm-hmm. to you, but you also just get to hang out with your FinTalk friends and do something that you would never have done. They have like outside camping. Bob just came back from his.
Right.
You know, you get to camp in the Arctic. We're going during whale watching time. So essentially they call it whale soup where you get in a kayak and then you're just surrounded by whales. You can like, it's just going to be incredible. So I'll start taking that. It's going to be expensive, as in like expensive is relative, of course, but it will be like probably around $13,000 per person and you can share a cabin.
Okay. Yeah, which is actually a reasonable price for that, right?
For 11 nights, all food, including alcoholic drinks, are available. You have a butler. You have all activities are included in that. So essentially, it's like almost just a little over $1,000 a night. And you get the night beforehand in a hotel, a private plane down to the boat. So, and flights from the United States to where we're going are not crazy. So it'll be awesome.
Very cool.
Yeah.
And if people want to stay up to date, they should join your email list.
Yeah, right? AmberlyGrant.com.
Okay.
Just go and go find things there.
Cool. Perfect. Good catching up.
Yeah.
And we'll record some more before too long.
Sounds good.
Thanks. Thanks for listening to the show. That was the Mile High Five podcast, and I'm Doug Cunnington. If you dig the show, please do 3 things for us. Number 1, tell a friend, a family member, an enemy about the show. We really don't care who you tell. Maybe forward them a specific show that you know that they will like. It's the single most helpful thing that you can do to spread the word. It's like giving us a virtual high five, and actually we don't give high fives in person, so the virtual kind's pretty good. And more importantly, your friend or family member or even your enemy will appreciate the fact that you were thinking of them. Number 2, make sure you're following or subscribed on your podcast app, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Overcast, YouTube, whatever you're using, and that way you won't miss a show. And number 3, please leave us a rating and review. We read them on the show occasionally, and you might hear yours out there on an upcoming episode. Quick disclaimer, this show is not financial or legal advice. I'd actually be surprised if it sounded like it. It's really just for entertainment, and that's at least what we're hoping for. But seriously, get advice from professionals. So we'll catch y'all next week. A saw you a few weeks ago in Cincinnati, and you gave one of the main stage talks in or at the Economy Conference. How did that go?
Oh, before the talk, I was locked in my hotel room, freaking out and doing my presentation over and over again while eating food I had for lunch. And then after the talk, it was amazing. I had so much fun.
And it's a huge stage, a very big auditorium, 500 people in there. And that sounds super scary to me. Were you totally freaked out?
No and yes. I have a very odd sense of determination in regards to public speaking. So when I was in grade four, I had heard, I can picture my grade four elementary school, and I had heard that public speaking was the greatest fear, worse than death. And I thought, well, this is an interesting thing. And so I decided at that moment, I remember looking at this little stage in our elementary school and thinking, I am going to master public speaking, and I am not going to be someone who's so afraid that they'd rather die than hop on a stage. So that has been my goal since grade four. I am now much older than 9 years old, and I try and take every public speaking opportunity that I have and do it. And so the answer was, I was extremely nervous leading up to it because I didn't know if I had prepared enough. And that's the number one thing with public speaking is preparation. Mm-hmm. Knowing, you know, where you are in your slides. And I had a bunch of things leading up to Economy that kind of gave me, I just didn't have a lot of time. And so right when I was backstage, I was super nervous, but I put my computer away. It was like, either I'm going to rock it or I'm not, right? And then the music came on and I don't remember anything after that. But no, it wasn't. It really wasn't. I felt like it's such a generous crowd. It's like probably one fifth of friends of mine. And I really wanted to do a good job for everyone because I wanted everyone to know that I took it very seriously. But I also knew that if I did mess up at any point, I could pause. Everyone would be very gracious. And then I could start from wherever I could remember that moment. Yeah.
Did you lose your spot at any point? Did you have any where all of a sudden you like detached and you were like, where am I and what am I doing? Do you know what I'm talking about?
Oh, 100%. Did you not notice?
There was one little one.
Correct. So at one point, I had a question mark go on the slide. And I remember my head went, what's the question? I was like, oh, shit. Note to self, never put a question mark on a slide ever, because you go into like a curious mode versus just saying your freaking speech. And so in that moment, I had to pause, walk. Then I said, what was I going to say here? And then it all came flooding back. And I didn't panic in that moment because I knew I'm going to get it. Even if I just have to skip to the next slide. I didn't want to also ruin the rest of it by like being really focused that I'd screwed up that in that moment. So I really was like
smart. Yeah.
I like took a breath, walked. Then I thought I'd address the fact that it was silence for a second because it was a little too long. I was like, oh, maybe I can recover. But then when I had to walk back, I was like, all right, too long. And then the second that I spoke, it all came rushing back of what was next. So that was a fumble point. And that was when I was like, ooh, but like breathe, stay calm. And then I think there was like something else that I stumbled on. Oh, like at the very end, I realized I'd run out of time. Like I was at my 20-minute mark. And so I wanted to be respectful of the time that Diana had given us on stage. So I kind of rushed at the very end. Then I decided like, slow down, Amberly. If you take 20 extra seconds, it's going to be much better for you just to slow down and end strong than it is to rush through it to like hit, not an arbitrary time because it's an important time frame, but like I hadn't, the red light goes up at 22 and I wasn't even close to that. So that was my other point where I was like, I kind of rushed for a second. Then I was like, just take a breath and slow down. Mm-hmm. What other moments did you see that I made a mistake? If you remember.
That was the only time where you actually paused for a second. The other thing is like, as an audience member, it's not fun to watch for mistakes. So it's like, I'm not watching for mistakes or anything like that.
No. And you don't know, right? Because you don't actually know what it was. I actually gave myself permission because my slides, I hate doing PowerPoints. I will talk. You can put me in front of thousands of people, hundreds, 10 people, I will talk for days. I'm fine with that. Without the normal nerves that come with speaking to people, like, you know, a rehearsed speech. But I hate doing PowerPoints with a passion. And because of that, and because of a couple of things that were going on before economy, specifically, my husband had to run to Vancouver because some tenants had kind of not trashed our unit, but he had to like go fix it up because they did not leave it in good condition. Mm-hmm. So he was gone for 5 days. Then we got sick for 2 full weeks.
Oh, man.
Yeah. And so then I was like, didn't have time. I got a sinus infection. I've never had one before. But if you've ever had one, it's like insane pressure. And anyways, so I was doing that. And then my work was crazy, like my day job. But point was, I didn't really get to practice my speech and the slides together often, hence why I locked myself in my hotel room. So I gave myself permission during the talk, if I needed to move forward, to remind myself where I was on the slide. Like, did I move to the next slide or not? Like, I had it down pretty well, but I gave myself permission. So you might see it in the video, like where I flip forward and then I flip back. Mm-hmm. I'm totally fine with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. And I see people do that, and you would think they accidentally hit this, yeah, like the button twice or whatever, yeah, just by accident.
That's what I thought I played off as if I needed to, yeah. But honestly, I'm also very open. You're like, yeah, it's fine.
When the thing is, for people that don't know, on that particular stage, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, mm-hmm, but you see the slides on the big screen, mm-hmm, which is behind you.
Yep.
You have a screen, but it also just shows you the same thing. You, yes, don't have access to your speaker notes.
Nope. Or the next other slide.
Yep. So you just see, yep, like the slide.
Literally, whatever's up behind me is up in front of me. So again, you have to know, I knew where I was going in my talking, but in the slide movement, I wasn't as confident because I didn't have as much time to practice with those.
Yep.
Yeah.
And then how do you memorize a speech like that?
Yeah. First of all, I write it. So a lot of people use AI, I think, now to write speeches, but it's not you. And so I used it to help with an outline to make sure that what I was doing was correct. And then I write it the way that I would speak it. And then I say it out loud. So I write it down first. Then I say it all out loud and change it. I actually write verbatim what I want to say and then know that it's never going to be exactly that. And you'll notice that what you write and what you say out loud, you trip over words that you think would be normal when you're writing, but you can't say them. You don't know how to say them, or like, they just don't roll off of you properly. Someone else could say them and it's totally normal. So then I rewrite it with that. Then I like to go backwards and start to say it backwards to myself so that I kind of know, because you get the first part down really well because you do it over and over again, but then you start to get lazy about the back end. So honestly, you just say it over and over. And then my number one thing is, before you ever go in front of the crowd you're supposed to speak to another crowd. So I do it on FinTalks every single time. And FinTalks people, first of all, it's the first time I might say it out loud to other people. So do the concepts jive? Does it make sense? What I thought was a flow, is it really a flow? And then they'll give me pointers on how to do things, like do it differently, say it differently. So I actually completely revamped my talk after FinTalks the Tuesday before the event, because I had done it in front of Diana. And then I did it with Roger one-on-one. Then I did it in like a peer setting with 2 other people. But when I did it to FinTalks with people who didn't know what I was talking about, didn't have an outline in advance, I realized, first of all, I was over time. And people are like, you could cut some of the stories. So I mean, I cut like 2 full stories out of there. And I think it was much better because of that. So practice in front of others.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I saw Carl, because Carl spoke in 2021, yeah, mm-hmm, and he practiced that in front of, I think I saw him personally do it 3 times, and I think he did a couple others, and they were growing audiences each time.
Yeah.
And it was still a pretty big jump. I think the previous one was maybe like 75 people.
Oh, wow. Yeah, yeah.
And then the big talk, it wasn't sold out, because you were there that year,
yep,
I believe.
I was, yep.
And it wasn't, it was probably, yeah, 350.
Yeah, 300-ish people.
Still a lot of people. Yeah. But yeah, it's super interesting. I think, I don't know, it's stressful. And I'm like, I don't know if that's an area that, it seems exciting, like after, yeah, talking to people who are finished doing it. Yes. But I do understand the stress leading up to it. And yeah, I'm like, That said, if you're able to practice the talk a bunch,
yeah,
basically like what Carl did, then it's just like a little bit more than you did before, yeah, and it doesn't freak you out as much. And then you know, like, oh, I need to restructure this or take some stuff out or whatever.
Yeah.
Super interesting.
And you have to let your mind also sit with it. So like, you can't try and learn something the day before because you don't have enough time for your brain to process the information and then like let it soak in. So I knew that even when I locked myself in the room the day before, most of what I was going to do in that room was going to be futile. Like I had it or I didn't at that point, right? But doing it over a couple more times with the slides helped me feel more confident. I woke up in the middle of the night because some jerkwad was like dropping barbells in the gym at 12:30 at night. Yeah, I told you that.
Yeah.
And I was up for 2 hours after that. But during that 2 hours, I was like, well, I may as well go over my talk one time. And it was that moment. It was at 1 o'clock in the morning, freaking out that I couldn't sleep and I'd be like sleep deprived for the talk, that I realized I had it. Like, okay. I at least had the talking part enough and like most of the slide stuff that I was like, okay, I'm good.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I just think like, it's a job. Like I went to economy and worked. Like I didn't go the way that I socialized for 3 years prior, right?
Yeah.
I literally went and worked and thank goodness I was on day one. And then I did 2 breakout sessions as well. So it was like fun, but also a lot of work. Like you're saying, it's, I love it. Absolutely yeah. love it. But not everyone should do that.
Yeah, yeah. Uh-huh. And I mean, like, there are pro speakers out there, like yeah. Jordan and Joe, and they're super good at it. They mm-hmm. spend a lot of time and effort. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I mean, it takes it out of them, even though they're very good at it and they yeah. know what they're getting into.
Yep.
They still have nerves as well, but yep. it's a little different. But yeah, it's work to do that stuff. So.
Yeah. And I think one thing is that you have a personality who likes doing it or not. Like you can train yourself, but I love it. Mm-hmm. And I know that even if I'm up there and if I fumble, it's okay. And I can rely on all the public speaking I've done in the past, all the FinTalk, the 5 years of FinTalk sessions, 6 years now, 6 years of FinTalk sessions I've hosted, that like I can just pull shit out of my ass and like keep going without it being like, like we've all gone to bad talks.
Right.
Yeah. And but I think I can like, I can put the things together in a really split second moment that I feel very, that's where I think that's the number one thing. I feel confident that if I'm going to totally muck this up, at least I'll do it in an okay way. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Do you think you'd want to like actually, like you want to do it, but like, do you really want to do it?
Yeah. I don't think so. Like, I think if Diana was like, hey, do you want to do a talk? There's yeah. a strong chance I would say, no, I really appreciate, mm-hmm. but I really enjoy hanging out and I don't know if the stress is worth it. And it's one of those things, knowing that you and I were going to talk about this, I was like, things outside of your comfort zone are good.
Yes.
That said, I've gone a little outside the comfort zone. It's interesting. I'll probably do maybe like Camp Fi talks.
Yeah.
It's like it's a little bit of a different.
It's intimate.
Yeah. It feels different because it's 1/10 of the people or whatever.
Yeah.
But like overall, I'm not sure like getting out of my comfort zone and being uncomfortable in that area again, like does anything for me. Although, mm-hmm. I mean, do you have any observations like to the contrary?
Yeah. Even as someone who's talked a lot and I've talked, I think the biggest audience I've talked in front of is like 300 before this. First of all, yes. Okay. There are things you might get out of it. One, how to make good PowerPoints, right? Like, you know what's good and bad and to challenge yourself to do it. I know what a good PowerPoint looks like slides and stuff. And even then I was breaking the rules and had to like re-go back and be like, take all the words off Amberly, 6 words per slide, pictures worth 1,000 words, right? So even that to me was a really good learning opportunity. I got a lot better. I say that I hate doing these slides, but I actually, with like the new tools of Canva with their AI, where you can just like make a photo real quick, it's actually a lot better than it used to be, where you have to like search the internet and like make sure it's not water stamped and like bring it in, right? on like a PPT versus yeah. the Canva. So that was like, I felt that was something, a skill set I'm not good at, that I actually jokingly say I'm terrible at, but it was a muscle I've never flexed, and it showed me that, hey, I'm not that bad. So that was helpful. And then I like public speaking. So that really is like, it's out of my comfort zone. It's out of everyone's comfort zone, ultimately, but it's something I really want to work towards getting really good at. And so, yeah.
Got it. Yeah. Okay. Interesting. And the last presentation that I did for Camp Phi, I really enjoyed putting together the slides and like the rules that you were talking about slash just have pictures. So I think all the photos I took myself. So I was just like, no AI, this is clearly, and I had to iterate on that a little bit, but it was pretty fun. And that most of them were for comedic effect.
Yeah.
So I actually, that would be the biggest thing. Like there would be some point, but overall, it would just be, it would be like light on the content part, but hopefully hilarious.
Right.
So like,
which is a good talk.
And it's like, I remember a few years ago, James.
Lowry.
Yep. And he did, I think it was like an Airbnb, which I'm not super interested in the content area. No. However, it was hilarious. And he was, I mean, he's just a funny guy. If you just like walk up and talk to him for a minute or two, like he'll have you laughing.
Yeah.
But that was awesome. And it was a good talk. And I still remember it years later, even though the specific content wasn't
relevant
for me. So like, I imagine that and I'm like, oh, that could be good because in a business type set of presentations, you don't have to be that funny to be the funniest one up there, which is not, I mean, some people would be like, you know, he didn't take it seriously.
Right.
But like for the right people, that is exactly, I mean, it's good to have contrast, right?
Yes.
You don't want to have everyone be super serious the whole time. It's kind of a downer.
No, so. I agree. And you want different types of, like, I think Diana, this year was my absolute favorite economy. Like out of all the ones I've been to, it was the best. Absolutely the best. And one of the reasons was I think we had really good speakers with great differentiation in content, except that we were all kind of also similar, you know, like some of us, but like some really technical stuff, Brian's, the Will stuff, and then life in retirement, personal story. I thought it was just like a really good mix. Great speakers who were actually very captivating this year. I've had other years where I'm like, oh, okay, that was a really good talk. You know, maybe not as much stage presence, but we all have our things. And so I think this was really cool. My absolute favorite one. And all the restaurants were prepared for us. So that was like amazing where you're not like waiting in line with like really stressed college kids. So I thought that everyone did a good job. Any pointers from you? You know, you're not listening for mistakes, but pointers from you, not necessarily from me, but for people who do want to do public speaking after all the talks that you've heard, what would be like the two things you see a lot of people making mistakes on?
Great question. So number one, the slides.
Yeah.
So PowerPoint's tough. I don't think I'm probably better at it because I did it at work back in the day and started shifting from the boring kind of presentations you have at work with the templates. I started coming up with my own templates and they did have pictures and I was like doing bits in my meetings because like it's fucking boring, right?
Agree,
and I run the meeting, so like you may as well.
You can do whatever you want, sort of.
So not having too many words on the slide. Yep. I mean, sometimes having one word is great. No words, even better. Again, pictures and having like a new slide. I mean, think of watching just like short form video. I mean, things move fast.
Yeah.
And if you could do that, you'll keep people's attention. And then the other is probably less is more. Like you mentioned, you took out, you should come up with many ideas, but you should edit it down and like really distill it because all your ideas aren't good. If you could figure out the ones that are the most powerful, keep those. Maybe you have to restructure it. So I've done a couple, actually just a few days ago, I wrote something. I'm like, I got Elizabeth to take a look at it. And I'm like, you won't hurt my feelings. Go seriously. You won't hurt my feelings. You can tell me. I'm like, I think the structure is a little off. I think the order's off, but I'm not sure because you get into your head and you're like too close to it. I could come back to it in a couple of weeks, but like she could look at it and like, let's move this around. And literally she's done that two or three times where just moved a couple things around and I was like, oh, that's way better.
Yeah.
And I could see it, but I couldn't tell before someone else looked at it. So the structure, like whatever order you think you want to have it in, it's probably a little off. Although one tip on that, like good movies and a lot of books, they start with an action scene. Like they start 2/3 through the story, and then they back up and tell you what's going on. That's a really good way to like hook someone in to get them to keep listening and that sort of thing. So
agreed. Yeah. I also think of the story, like one of the things when I put my presentations together, I actually think of the audience feeling throughout my presentation. So I want to take them on I want to take them on an arc, like exactly what you're saying, as a movie or a show, which is maybe you do start with a really good hook. I don't think I started this one with a good hook. I don't remember what I did. And then I want them to be like reflective, like right away start to think, because I want them to really all of a sudden like ground themselves. Okay, what's going on? Okay, interesting. Then I want them to feel hopeful. And then, okay, you know, like maybe unsure and then hopeful again. Mm-hmm. And then we end, you know, I really love to kind of give a wave of emotions throughout it. Nice. And I think about that a lot when I'm putting together presentations, is what is the audience going to feel throughout this?
Smart.
Yeah.
Okay, we have to stop. We have an actual episode to record. That's like a mini one.
I know. You could just post that.